For years, Roberts edited Chittister's columns for National Catholic Reporter. The two were friends, and he says he thought he knew her. But that was before he sat down with Chittister for a series of lengthy and intense interviews. Roberts' new biography plows some old ground, like Chittister's famous showdown with the Vatican over her support for women's ordination, her work on global human rights, and her years as the prioress of her Benedictine monastery after the Vatican II reforms. But Roberts also discovered there are many things about her life that Chittister chose to leave out of her many autobiographical writings.
What I found out was that Joan Chittister didn't just arrive out of a bubble one day, an advocate for women and for justice issues and that sort of thing. She lived through a really tough childhood. There was a lot of violence in her home, an alcoholic stepfather, and she watched her mother under those circumstances, and I think that began to illuminate a great deal of what she became. So religious life also meant something other than just a young girl's desire to live a holy life, although that was certainly part of it, and from a very young age. The order and the community of Benedictines in Erie became a place of respite, a place of peace and calm. And then they really recognized her gifts along the way and nurtured her to who she is today.
She's written about her polio. She's written about struggles as a young sister in the community. Why did she never talk about in her books her childhood and the kind of trauma that she suffered?
Her answer to that question was very simple. It's time. We discussed it more at a later point, even actually after the book was published, and she said no one had ever asked her that question. And I found that almost impossible to believe at first, and then I realized that in other circumstances, I had never asked her that question or those questions. Where did you come from? How did you get to be who you are? And she also said that part of the reason she never addressed it herself was because she didn't want to hurt her mother, didn't want to embarrass her stepfather or family members. And by 2011, when we did the initial interviews, all those people were gone. And I think she felt a certain freedom then in discussing things that she wouldn't have approached earlier.
Although she never spoke publicly until now about her childhood, it has been said of Joan Chittister that she doesn't have an unpublished thought in other areas of her life. So what else surprised you?
Well, Joan, for all of her seriousness, loves a good time. I found out she is a terrible driver of cars, and that one afternoon she was stopped three times by the Coast Guard in Lake Erie for speeding in a boat. She loved to fish, and I guess she received some money for one of her anniversaries and bought a larger boat for the community and called it the Abbey, so that if somebody called and she was out in the boat, they could say the prioress was in the Abbey. No, there's an enormous range of activity that she undertakes that really grows out of a love of people and being with people. The other thing that surprised me was the range of people that she writes to. She decided at one point, she told me, that because her sisters were doing all of this other work in the community, she felt she wasn't doing anything. So she decided that her ministry would be to write to everyone who wrote to her. And I encountered people along the way who had been writing to her and receiving letters for years.
It's interesting that she thought writing 50 books over the course of 20 or 30 years was not doing enough, was not doing as much as her sisters in the community.
Well, one of the other things that surprised me was there's a sense about her of I'm never doing enough. I'm never really adequate to the task. I mean, I've seen her in circumstances, and this is part of the personality profile, if you will, where she was giving a lecture, a powerful lecture, that she had given probably a dozen times before. And she was near the point of illness before she went on. She was fussing with this thing until the very last moment. Do I have the right words? Am I asking the right questions? Do I have this phrase correctly? So that for all of the power and confidence you see, there is also a sort of an underlay of real self-doubt that grew out of her early period and even some recollections of how her mother viewed her. So she's a complicated, we all know, a very complicated person, but somebody who has risen above those kinds of real obstacles.
How did her mother view her?
Well, it was, I think it was a very, very close relationship, and I think a lot of that closeness grew out of the fact that they had to depend on each other for survival. Listen, as a 7-year-old, her mother was giving her instructions about what she should do should the worst thing happen.
What did that mean?
That meant if her stepfather got so violent and her mother was, you know, incapacitated, killed, she knew where the key and the money were under the rug, and the addresses to people that she should get to and the money were under the rug, and she had figured out and told her how to get out of the house, who not to contact, and where to go. And for a 7-year-old girl in the mid-1940s, that's an enormous burden. I think also her mother had enormous expectations of her. So Joan talks about all her mother's comments on all of her report cards. She lived to please her mother, and she got great grades. You know, she was recognized early on as a really special intellect as a child. And every year her mother would write in the line for parents, Joan can always do better. And she still lives with that. Joan can always do better. And, how much better can you do it? How many things? I mean, in the time it took me, and this was about a total of a 3.5 to 4 year project, I did one book, she did three. she really is a disciplined intellect as well as a very broad one.
Joan Chittister is known all over the world, but she's ever a member of the Erie Benedictine Sisters. What amazes me when I've visited that community is that there's absolutely no jealousy or resentment that I can detect of Joan's fame, of her travels, of her independence at times from the community. To what do you attribute that?
I detect the same thing you detected, and I put it in the frame of a family. Because I did detect some, resentments, some people who would do things differently. And certainly she had opposition when she was at the end of her years as prioress. And that's another thing that kind of surprised me. I did some interviews with her successor. And there was a period when Joan went into a very dark place. I mean, she did not know what she was going to do. And there were people in the community who she heard saying, we want to reverse a lot of the things that she did, and she instituted an enormous amount of change. So it wasn't always a placid and easy place to be. She had to find her way back to the community and to a ministry outside the community during that period. But what I detected, as you have, is that these women would go across, 6 lanes of traffic at rush hour for each other, even if they weren't the best of friends. And that has to do, I think, with this peculiar vow of stability, which to me translates into a promise to a specific group of people and a place, so that though she's traveled the world, a dozen or more times over, she's still in Erie. And she makes all of the big days in Erie. She makes all of the important meetings. And that community also is her support. I mean, it sustains her. She would not be able to do what she does without their support. And I think that within the community, as I detect, they can call her to account in a way that the rest of the world can't as well. And it's a powerful model. It's a powerful model for how to live life outside of that kind of religious rigor, and also a powerful model for the church.